107.3.
Hello and welcome. You are tuned in to 2SER 107.3. My name is Andrew Popel and you are listening to Final Draft. It is books, writing and literary culture coming to you every week on your airwaves, online, wherever you are listening. I welcome you to the show. It is so great to be able to talk books. Now, 2SER broadcasts from the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. Now, I am recording this show from home. I am on the lands of the Darug and the Gundungurra people. And I want to start by acknowledging the traditional owners of those lands. I want to acknowledge their ongoing connection to the land. Sovereignty was never ceded. It always was, always will be Aboriginal land. I have a fantastic interview coming up today. But look, before we get to that, just an FYI, I'm going to be speaking with Robbie Arnott. He has a new book out and that just is so exciting to me. But also exciting was last Thursday, so on Thursday the 16th of July, the Miles Franklin Award for 2020 was announced. Now, the Miles Franklin Award is widely regarded as the premier literary prize in Australia, and this year the shortlist was no exception. So what I'm going to do, if you haven't heard first, I'm going to go through the shortlisted authors because these are all books well worth your attention. The shortlist included The White Girl by Tony Birch, Islands by Peggy Frew, No One by John Hughes, The Returns by Philip Salom, Exploded View by Carrie Tiffany, and The Yield by Tara June Winch. This is an incredibly strong shortlist. It's a remarkable shortlist in that there are two Indigenous authors on the list. And look, I know I had a pick. I had a favourite book from last year that I am not afraid to talk about. So it was just so great to see that the winner of the 2020 Miles Franklin Award was Tara June Winch with The Yield. The Yield is an incredible novel told across three narrations, exploring intergenerational trauma, culture, and language for the characters. Tara is just an incredible writer. I would encourage you to go check out The Yield. If you want to find out a little bit more about The Yield, I did have the chance to speak to Tara while she was in Australia early last year, and she was an incredibly generous conversationalist talking to me as she ran between events. So go check that out, that conversation on the Final Draft Great Conversations podcast, and go get yourself a copy of Tara June Winch's The Yield. It is the 2020 winner of the Miles Franklin Literary Award. Now, coming up on the show today is an interview with Robbie Arnott. Now, Robbie is the award-winning author of Flames. He and I chatted a few years back, and Flames was just such an incredible award. It was shortlisted for the Miles Franklin Award too, if I remember correctly. And his new novel is called The Rain Heron. It takes us to a forest near a town where a woman lives. She's driven herself to a life of solitude until the military arrive, and they are searching for something impossible. They are searching for a mythological creature, the Rain Heron. If you are familiar with Robbie's writing, you know how incredible and how well he does the fantastical. So I'm so excited to be bringing you that interview discussing Robbie Arnott's The Rain Heron. It is coming up. You are on Final Draft. This is 2SER 107.3, and it's after this short break.
2SER wishes to acknowledge the custodians of the land from which we broadcast, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation and the Wadumatagal clan of the Darug Nation, and their elders past, present and emerging. We acknowledge and respect their continuing culture and the contribution they make to the life of this city and this region.
You are tuned in to 2SER 107.3. This is Final Draft. It is books, writing and literary culture. My name is Andrew Popel and I am about to introduce an absolutely incredible story by an author that you have met before. And if you remember Robbie Arnott's Flames, you will know the sort of incredible writing Robbie comes out with. Robbie, look, welcome back. Welcome. Thank you for joining me again. This is so exciting to be chatting.
Thank you for having me, Andrew. It's really, really nice to be back a couple of years later.
It's exciting to have a new book. Congratulations. We were just talking about how Flames has been picked up to be turned into a series, which is very exciting. But I want to foreshadow a little bit of our discussion by trying to get to grips with the Rain Heron. Because in a forest near a town lives a woman. Ren has driven herself to a life of solitude after her world was torn apart by the violence of a military coup that has overtaken the country. Now, Ren's surviving through her skill, wits, and a guarded alliance with a man in the nearby village. But when the military arrive in the forest that is Ren's sanctuary, she believes she can hide and perhaps outlast them, though she's soon drawn into their quest for an impossible creature. I think the best way to start this conversation is to talk a little bit about mythology. The Rain Heron opens with the mythology of the Rain Heron. It's a bird-like creature, seemingly made of water, that as I can tell, it bestows vigor on the land. And in your opening, the Rain Heron is driven from the land by human jealousy and the actions of an individual, and it causes the destruction of the entire town. Mythology infuses the entire novel, and I wondered what role mythologies and the stories that are beyond the ordinary kind of play in your life.
I'm deeply interested in myths and those older forms of storytelling, and I knew I wanted to write about the environment and nature as well. And I guess in my life I'm really lucky. I live in Tasmania, so I get to go to spend a lot of time out in the natural world in very beautiful places. It's all very accessible to me, and I like stalling and bushwalking and things like that. And so it's hard, I find, to look around the world we live in the natural landscapes and not to feel a sense of it all being much bigger than we are. And I don't mean that in some very deep spiritual sense. I just mean in almost a sense of confusion, because I do feel kind of awe-inspired in the older sense of the word. And so when it comes to mythology, it makes sense to me that people have always made myths up about the world they live in. And so when it came to writing The Rain Heron, I wanted to create these myths where people were completely almost nowhere near as important as the forces shaping the world around them. And I wanted there to be these huge elemental forces occurring that weren't subjugated by humans or weren't even all that concerned with humans. And then I wanted to put real people in those environments and see what happened and tease out these characters and conflicts against a mythical backdrop.
So you stage the world of the Rain Heron. It's a world on the edge, and there's been a military coup that we constantly hear referred to. The details are hazy, but we can see that there's environmental degradation and a consequent sort of human response that sees ever more control being asserted by a central authority. And I guess we first see this in Ren. She's driven herself into the woods. The landscapes of the Rain Heron, they're vivid, and they're very hard to place in a single space. But it seems they're also constantly morphing around the humans. Now, Ren learns to live within her environment, but others find themselves victim to sudden and capricious turns in the weather. Is this an environment maybe taking back control a little bit?
In a sense, definitely. Yeah, it's very much, the characters in the book are very much can be divided into two camps, I realised after I'd written it. It wasn't all that deliberate. But there's people who exist within an environment in a way that where there's a bit of give and take and they're not seeking to dominate it, but they're seeking to live within it. And there's characters who are seeking to completely dominate the environment or to take as much as they can from it without thinking of it as a mutual coexistence. So the environment in that sense does essentially take things back or not necessarily fight back, but there are consequences. There are real consequences to what people do to the natural world around them. I think that's just as true in my strange made-up novels as it is in our world.
It strikes me when I read your novels and even like, so thinking back to Flames, but vivid in my mind right now is The Rain Heron, that you're someone who perhaps in your life, but definitely in your writing, you sit very happily with ambiguity. And that's something that I love in The Rain Heron. There are things that I think I know about the story, but you are always just one step away from confirming.
Oh, thank you. No, I think ambiguity is really important, at least to my writing style, because I think it allows for a richer story. And unless I'm absolutely sure that this is the exact thing I want to make crystal clear, I'll leave it a little slightly open for interpretation because I feel if I'm not 100% sure about it, then I shouldn't insist that it is that way. And I think it's a nice way of reading a story too. It's nice to feel like you're involved in something and becoming figuring things out about something rather than just being told something.
So Ren is our character we meet. She's living in the woods. Ren seems to present an interesting conundrum because while it seems that she has had to escape an unlivable world, it's also hard for us to escape the conclusion that she's kind of abdicated any responsibility for being a part of that world. She's fled for her own reasons, but we do meet other characters who have had to remain. Can we ever just escape our world when it gets too much for us? I mean, I feel like this is not a small question, I think, in the times that we are living in.
No, we can for a short amount of time, I think. I think there is a degree of escape, but as occurs in the rain here into Ren, and as occurs in our world with the despoilation of nature, there's no running forever, and the consequences of your actions, of our actions, will always catch up with us. And I guess that's that occurs to some of the characters in the rain here, and eventually it all catches up.
Mm. So Ren is living in the woods. She has this uneasy alliance with Barlow, and into this world steps Harker. And we come to learn that she is an efficiently brutal soldier, but she's also captivating to all who meet her. And it seems like there is this kind of an overlap between her grace and single-mindedness. It was such an interesting character to introduce into this dynamic, and particularly the ways... Could you talk a little bit about the ways that Harker goes about achieving her ends? Particularly the way she, I guess, gets under Ren's skin.
Yeah, so Harker is a like you said, a very brutally efficient character who is incredibly sure of herself and is seeking to fulfil her objective in the quickest way possible. And while it's not very clear in the book early on, she actually wants to do it with the middle amount of cruelty and pain as well. And she's perfectly happy to be cruel and to be brutal. She thinks it's warranted, but she'd really rather not. But she cares more about her objectives and her goals than she does about taking care of people or being a good person. And it's something that occurs to her and occurs to Ren is what are the costs of achieving your goals? And there are great costs for both of them. And I wanted to create a character with Harker who is at once completely kind of hateable. She's kind of scary, but at the same time, somewhat understandable. And you realise that almost maybe she's the lesser of some of the greater evils around.
The narrative of the Rain Heron shifts at this point, and we're introduced to Zoe. We move to a whole other part of the country. And in Zoe's story, the role of the northerner was particularly interesting to me. And look, I mean, I guess in the way that we are thinking about that balance of humans living with nature, because you introduce another mythology, the savage but sort of magical ink squids that have to be tamed with human blood. And into this world, the northerner arrives. He's this sort of figure of industrial progress, and he's rebuffed by the town who prefer their old ways. And in this town, we see this was what was most interesting to me. We see the town suffer despite rebuffing the northerner. And I could see a different way this story plays out where they take on the northerner's industrial progress and that's why they suffer. But the town suffers despite this. He was just a part of a larger system and they become victims of that larger system. Was this a sort of a bleak look at the stranglehold that commerce and the free market has on our lives?
It was, in a sense, although I didn't really know what I was definitely trying to say other than to paint a picture of things that occur. And in a sense of this poor town, they reject this kind of friendly industrialization approach from the northerner. But no matter how far removed they are from the rest of the world, they aren't removed from the consequences of climate change and from the degradation of the environment. So it shows how that these things are taken out of some people's hands. It stuff kind of occurred to me when I was on holiday in Europe and I was, my fiance and I were kind of hiking around the High Tatras, these mountains in Slovakia. And I was reading the information panels about the forests there. And they're saying, well, all these forests are dust regrowing from years and years of acid rain that all washed over from these huge factories, all the restaurants, but with these huge factories, hundreds and hundreds of kilometers away in other countries. Yet the acid rain fell on the mountains of Slovakia and completely destroyed the forest for a few decades. And I just couldn't get that out of my mind, that these local people actually had nothing to do with that, and yet they suffered the consequences of some decisions made so far away.
That is Robbie Arnott there discussing how climate change and telling the impacts of climate change are unavoidable in storytelling. Now, Robbie is the author of The Rain Heron. You are tuned in to 2SER 107.3. This is Final Draft. It is books, writing and literary culture. My name is Andrew Popel, and there is more of that conversation with Robbie to come. Robbie and I will be back discussing The Rain Heron, but I want to share a track. This is from Melbourne's Black Bats. Now, look, the impacts of COVID-19 are devastating to artists and to the entertainment industry. So it is just so important that we support artists by listening to their music, but going and buying their music. So if you love this track from Black Bats, go check out their Bandcamp and support Australian artists. Here from Black Bats, this is Mild Heat. You are on 2SER 107.3. My name is Andrew Popel. Now, right there, we had a new track from Melbourne band Black Bats. It was called Mild Heat. If you loved that, you can get it on their Bandcamp. Support Australian artists, support local artists, because we want to hear... I don't know about you. I want to be able to go and hear them play live. So I want these artists to have a livelihood. We will keep playing them here on 2SER. So support them any way you can. Now, Final Draft is books, writing, and literary culture. And today I am in conversation with Robbie Arnott. Robbie's new novel is called The Rain Heron, and we are going to get back to that discussion right now. Now, The Rain Heron, it has this relatively small ensemble of characters, but you do take us through and across stages of their lives, and the growth and the development is neither, well, it's not linear. Do you have a sense of how your characters grow for you, and what are you looking for when you are sort of developing characters in this way?
Yeah, I guess I just try to put them in circumstances that will force them to react in ways that they can't quite predict themselves. So it's, I guess we're trying to create levels of tension and difficult circumstances. And they're not so much to actively try and grow them as characters, but to see how they would react and then write that out and see how I think it would go. And then once that has occurred, how I think they would have changed. Mm-hmm. And I don't come to the page knowing for sure what's going to happen. Like, I think I know what the circumstances will be, but it's not until I've written those scenes out that then I can think, well, how would that actually change them? And sometimes it's not the way I would have predicted. It's not that I have characters talking in my head or anything like that. I'm not one of those sort of writers, but it's more that I have to write the scenes out to stimulate that growth and then to try and figure it out as we go along. I'm a very chaotic novelist in that sense. I don't have big sheets planning every plot point out. I just live in chaos.
There's a particular juxtaposition juxtaposition of a character's development that plays out in a really interesting way. I was very conscious of coming to this character in different ways as you revealed them. Were you conscious of, I guess, maybe the way you'd sort of flipped a usual development there?
Yeah, I was in a sense. I really wanted to show the growth of a character in a way that's not, that is done sometimes, but it's not the most common form of turning someone into a hero or turning someone into a villain or seeing a child become an adult. I wanted to do it in a way that left everything quite morally grey. It's not someone becoming a bad person or a good person. It's not an ascent or a descent. It's a deepening of complexion, I guess, trying to make this character realise some of the faults of what they've done and change their behaviour and become a different person. But at the same time, not necessarily become a clear-cut, redeemed figure, because I think redemption is never that neat.
Can we talk a little bit about your bestiary? Through both The Rain Heron and The Ink Squids, though, you do show us these strangely familiar animals that humans must live in this kind of perilous harmony with. The Rain Heron takes out the eyes of anyone that would seek to harm it, while the squid can only be calmed by this mutual exchange of blood with a human. These are animals that are kind of actively... They're actively defying the kind of exploitation that our current world is built on. Are they purely works of imagination for you? Like, how do you go about creating that?
Yeah, they are. I guess they are quite imaginative. I do definitely look to resources and sources of inspiration, mostly in the natural world. A lot of it is trying to look at something that is real and asking, what if? That's where I came up with this impossible squid from. I actually came from snorkeling and looking at cuttlefish and just asking, what if, what if, what if? And trusting that I wasn't so weird that people would just throw the book across the room. But with the actual rain heron, I wanted to create this kind of totemic, mythical character that represented the beauty and the savagery of nature. I wanted it to be captivating but perilous. And kind of the more I thought about it, I realized I was just thinking about a storm, where you can watch a storm roll in and it's almost the most brutally gorgeous thing you've ever seen, but also it'll kill you in an instant. And it has absolutely no regard for human emotion or human endeavours. And so I pretty much just turned a storm into a bird. And then wrote it in enough different ways that I found it interesting. So that's kind of where I came up with that one from. But there's no set template for how I go about making these things up. I just stumble around in the dark and see if I land on something.
They're absolutely fantastic. And we talked a little earlier about ambiguity, and we also talked about the idea of taking lessons. And I mean, I think it's probably a question for the ages around whether the stories that we hold on to, the stories that become mythologies that are passed from generation to generation, begin as lessons or become lessons because they resonate. And I mean, that was something that I definitely got out of The Rain Heron, that a story that resonates ultimately will have lessons in it. And that's part of the resonance. It is just an absolutely fantastic tale.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm just really kind of bemused in a good way that people are on board with it all, because I just feel like I'm making weird things up and trying to tell stories in interesting ways. So the fact that anyone's interested just really knocks me off my feet, to be honest. I'm having a good time.
Can I ask you then a little bit? This is a sort of question I never usually go to, but those responses that you get from people, what do they show you about your storytelling? What are you getting when you find someone who resonates with your work? Because you've just said that you sort of think you're creating weird things and you're happy people engage, but is that showing you something about what people are searching for?
I guess so. I wouldn't presume to understand people all that well. I don't think I understand myself even very well. But it's really interesting to see what parts of the books and in The Rain Heron that people are attracted to and are engaged with. I think it does show that a lot of people are more interested in nature than perhaps as a society we really are aware of. I think people are really interested in the natural world and in preserving the natural world and diving into the messiness and weirdness of it. That it's not a clean-cut English lawn, that animals aren't all best friends, it's not the wind in the willows. Yeah, I think people are really interested, and I really appreciate that. And even when there's parts of that my books that don't like, I'm really interested in hearing about that too, partly because I want to be a better writer, and also because it shows what people react to. And I'll never think, oh, they didn't like that book, that part of the book, they don't know what they're talking about. I generally think, oh, it's really interesting. I wonder why, but I probably can't send them an email because that would just be weird. It's just interesting to see what people engage with and that people are taking interest in things that aren't made up but all very much based in the environment.
I'm speaking with Robbie Arnott, and his latest book is The Rain Heron. It is, if you loved Flames, you will love this book. If you haven't yet encountered Robbie's writing, well, lucky you, you've got two to discover. Go out and get The Rain Heron. Robbie, thank you so much for taking the time.
Oh, thank you, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
Stories, ideas, music. 2SER 107.3.
Yes, you are on 2SER 107.3. It is Stories, Ideas and Music, and this is Final Draft. So we got a big emphasis on the stories because we are books, writing and literary culture coming at you every week, Saturday morning and Wednesday nights. My name is Andrew Popel, and I want to say a huge thank you to Robbie Arnott. Robbie spoke to me on the show today about his new novel, The Rain Heron. Now, if you missed any of that conversation, if you want to catch more of that conversation, because when I speak to authors, we can have some incredible conversations that don't all make it to air, go to the Final Draft Great Conversations podcast. The interview with Robbie will be up after the show. You can also catch incredible conversations with the likes of Kate Grenville, who has a new novel out, Solari Gentile. Speaking of Solari Gentile, have you caught my friends Flex and Herds on Death of the Reader on Sunday nights? They have been discussing Solari Gentile's novel, All the Tears in China. They have an interview with Solari. Just like Final Draft, you can check them out on the radio, online, and also on the podcast. There are so many ways to discover new books. I'm going to mention just one more. I mean, I have to say goodbye soon, but I think I've got time to mention one more. Every Tuesday morning with Alex on Brekkie, I pop up and I will be giving you a sort of a book review. We call it the Tuesday Book Club. And it's a chance where I'll actually recommend and discuss books that I've been enjoying lately. So many ways to enjoy your books. You are on Final Draft, and look, it is so great to be able to get on your radio every week. Thank you so much to all the listeners out there. Thank you so much to the people who donated to our Save Our Signal campaign, and to those of you that are regular supporters, and those of you that are making contributions all the time. We are a community radio station, and you are our community. I am Andrew Popel. It is time for me to say goodbye, but till next week, happy reading. Bye for now.